Blog Talk Radio.
All right, welcome to the Real Sports Guys. This is D. Willis in the building with my guy Phil, PhD, in the house. We're getting a little later start tonight. We got a lot to cover in terms of the NBA game. We are ready to roll, rock and roll tonight. Last week we went in deep on the LeBron trade and what was going on in the NBA and free agency, and we'll hit more on that. But you know, we're turning towards the NFL season and getting ready for that, and so we're going to cover some issues around with the NFL and try and keep that ball rolling. But before I go, you know, before we get started and get into the show, we're going to bring in my guy Phil. You know, he's over there. He's like Kevin Love. Everybody trying to trade for him. Everybody trying to trade for him, trying to find out, you know, if he wants to come to Chicago or Cleveland. And so we know we love that. So how you doing, Kevin Love, PhD?
I'm doing good, man. Kevin Love will look real good in the Cleveland Cavalier uniform. That's everybody here in Ohio is hoping for.
You're the luckiest cat I know. You're there for the early part of LeBron and the whole mix. You kind of go and continue education, come back. You come back right into – it's like you're sitting in the cat burst league. You got to be the luckiest cat I know.
Yeah, earlier – you know, when LeBron first started back in 2003, those are the Ricky Davis days, the Juan Wagner days. You know, he did have that 1 year with Boozer. They looked real good, he and Boozer. But then Boozer duped the, yeah, we know what happened with Boozer, but, yeah, it was a bad situation. But I'm looking forward to the season.
The thing about it, and it's karma's a musket because Boozer hasn't been the same since he did that. Think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Well, I should say he's been stealing money ever since, but I shouldn't say that. But he's been very well paid for load level production. I should say that. I'll leave it alone. We got game changer in the building. How you doing? It's like he's like the Magic Johnson. He's like the. Was it Paul Pierce? Who was the cat who was a point guard for the Bucks, the point forward, Marcus, back in the day? You remember what's the big fellow used to be with Moncrief? That might have been before your time. They had like
Paul
a point
Presley.
Forward. Back. Yeah, Paul Pressey.
Yeah, Paul
you know,
Pressey.
Paul, yeah, the Paul. You like the Paul Pressey? You can look over the defense. You can see everything you need to see on the floor. So you the Paul Pressey of the group. What's up, man?
Hey, man, I'm feeling good, man. Glad to be in. Got in at the buzzer. You know what I'm saying? I had to check into the table. I had to run to the table late. You know, coach was calling me. You know, I wasn't hearing him. I was in a conversation with a fan. Had to, you know, rip off the warm-ups and just run on the court.
don't pull a hamstring now. Don't pull a hamstring
right,
on that.
Right.
The proper warm-ups, you know. But you're here to lead us down the floor, so I'll step off. I'm feeling good. I'm glad to be here, but I'll give it back to my point guard and get out the way and go to the
right,
point
well,
where I'm
let me look over the top of the defense and get the listeners into the intro to let them know you listen to the Real Sports Guys.com, RSG Renegade Radio, brought to you by Frederick's Accounting, Excel Academics, On the Rocks and Rocks at Illinois, and Resistance Digital Solutions. All guests and hosts come via the Frederick's Accounting Gateway. Frederick's Accounting, a national accounting service where clients get comprehensive support for their business or personal accounting needs. Frederick's Accounting, the official accountant for RSG. Tell them the Real Sports Guys sent you. We got another hot podcast, another show, big show lined up for you folks out there, for you renegades. We got in the funky editorial. We're going to get deeper into this whole Kevin Love, Cleveland Cavaliers situation. Who would you take? Would you keep Wiggins? Would you make the trade for Love? How much would you give up? We don't get into all of that. How does this trade impact where Cleveland stands in the East? And what does the East look like right now? That's something that we got to kind of take assessment of right now as well. We're going to get into some fantasy football. You know, we're quickly approaching on August, and that's fantasy season. Several teams have opened their training camps this week. A few more will be opening by week's end. So it's time to start talking some football. And it's time for the real sports guys to get you guys ready to dominate your fantasy football league. Our man Eric Hamilton will be coming through hard with Fantasy Football Cypher, so be on the lookout for that. Him and PhD do great work. Excellent work. And Eric really misses. You know, some of the mainstream fantasy guys, the Matt Berrys, the Eric Carabels, you know, sometimes they just throw stuff against the wall, and if you throw enough stuff against the wall, something's going to stick, right? Eric is very precise. He's like, you know, he's surgical with this, right? He's surgical with his, and he gives you very efficient, on-point information as to exactly who to get, when to get them, why to get them, who to make moves for. There's no fluff. If he drops a name, it's a need-to-know name. So make sure him and PhD, again, they lay the game quite flat. So make sure you check that out when the Fantasy Football Cypher start hitting the airwaves.
How you want it, Jay? How you want it?
So get off with Dog of the Week, Resistance Digital Dog of the Week, something we do every week. We highlight a top performer, give a shout-out, give some shine to somebody who stepped up and had their dog meter way up for the past week. We're going to do some NFL talk. A lot going on. You know, we put together our rundown a couple of days ahead of time, and we put together this rundown before the whole Tony Dungy situation broke. And I think when we get to the NFL talk, we might want to hit that's something that I think we got to adjust a little bit because, you know, people are all over the place with where they stand on this particular situation. And I think, again, we need to bring some levity and some realness to the conversation. So we may have to chime in on that. But we also have some things that we're going to talk about as far as previewing the season, the upcoming season, the 2014-15 season that's coming up. And then we're going to hit you with the last word. This week, D-Wills is going to hit you off with the XL Academics last word. XL Academics, changing the world one mentor at a time. You know, we take the last few minutes of every show and kind of give one of the members, we isolate them, you know, give them, put them on a block or put them on a high post. You know, I like it on the wing. You know, we all got our spots. So, you know, we give them the ball and just kind of let them run the clock out. You know, so that's our show for tonight. It's going to be slamming. It's going to be hot. I got my guys with me running the wings. You know, so you got these fellas with you. You can't really miss. So we're going to go ahead and hit the sound and jump right into it.
Fellas, one thing we need to say. Yes, shall we say it, y'all? Yes, Melvin, right. Jimmy, yes, Coleman, Ryan, yes, sit. Yes. Everybody want to get funky one more time.
All right, this edition of Funky Editorial is brought to you by On the Rocks in Rockford, Illinois. Make sure you check out our man Craig Sockwell at On the Rocks in Rockford. Great food, great people. Tell them where RSG sent you. Again, we got to get working on that menu and everything, but make sure you hit up On the Rocks when you get a chance. They sponsor the Funky Editorial and keep the way funky. So this edition of the Funky Editorial, we're at a bit of an impasse, I guess, for lack of a better term. Cleveland, LeBron decided to go back home, which I think was a great move on his part. But in doing that, he's put a ton of pressure on the organization to put together as quickly as they can a team that not only has the opportunity to win now, but win for years to come. And they're in a great spot. They got some assets to move. There are some big-time talent, where there is a big-time talent available in Kevin Love. So, you know, they're kind of in a situation. They have last year's number one pick in Anthony Bennett. They have this year's number one pick in Andrew Wiggins, both on the table. Plus, they have some very good draft picks. They own Miami's draft pick, which will be unprotected in a couple of years, which may not be as good as it once was when LeBron was there. So things have shifted. The landscape has changed a lot. Cleveland is in a catbird seat and has some chips to move. Minnesota's in a situation where they have Kevin Love. He seems to be disgruntled. He seems to want out. They seem to be willing to grant his wishes for the right price rather than lose him for pretty much nothing. So right now, you know, the situation is ripe for a deal to be made. The question I want to pose to the real sports guys is, do you make the deal? Right now, what sits on the table, as reported by several sources, is that Cleveland has offered Andrew Wiggins, Anthony Bennett, and a future number one. Is that enough if you're Minnesota? D. Wills, if you're Flip Saunders, are you taking that deal?
Yeah, I'm taking it because, you know, for Flip, he's got to – he's not close to competing in the West. What he has to do is build a foundation that he can build around. And so I take that because he's got everything he needs to begin to structure, you know, his team. But he also has enough pieces if he wants to move again somewhere, he might be able to bring a vet in. But, you know, I think Minnesota has to find, you know, a person who wants to be there. You know, they have to find their Duncan. They have to find a Kevin Durant who is okay with, you know, not being in New York City. They got to find, is that Wiggins? It could be. I mean, he's a Canadian-born kid. You know, he might not have as much affinity worried about, you know, where to be. He may have watched and seen someone like Kevin Durant make it and do it anywhere. And, you know, Flip has demonstrated that he can get his teams some wins. So I go with it because it allows for him to build the youth movement and not have to worry about having a disruptive atmosphere throughout a season. He needs to really start to set the culture, and the last thing you need to do is go through half a season wondering what's going to happen without really, you know, beginning to set your culture.
Okay. And, you know, I think you know, you raised some great points. I mean, and I think the big piece is that, you know, he's going to – they may lose Kevin Love for nothing. And,
right.
You know, upside is a hot word, you know, and it's a word that can make a career or break a career as far as executives go. And Andrew Wiggins is padded up with the word upside all over him. You know, he can't shake it. So, you know, I want to go to the flip side of this and bring in, you know, our man on the spot. You know, he's on the ground. He's at ground zero. He's at the epicenter of all of this. PhD, you know, you spoke about this earlier and how the kind of greater Cleveland area, Northeast Ohio, is excited about the idea of Kevin Love. Are you making that deal? If you're Cleveland, do you feel good about putting Wiggins in the trade? Because that was a sticking point before.
Right. I think Cleveland's in a win-win situation. LeBron and Kyrie are young enough where they can hold off on the trade and use that extra cap room to make a move in the offseason, or to pick up a couple of different role players to give them more depth and bank on Bennett being better, having LeBron around, and Wiggins being a pretty strong defender out the gate. However, if given the choice, I would take Kevin Love right now and give up Wiggins and Bennett and that pick right away. Because you only have – it's all about LeBron James right now. He'll be 30 coming up pretty soon. Either he's 30 now or he'll be 30 during this upcoming season. And he's only got so many more years of being the Superman LeBron that we know and love right now. So I feel like it's so difficult to win in the NBA. You don't want to give away years. You got a guy like Kevin Love along with LeBron and Kyrie. You have an opportunity to win right now. And within two seasons, you would think, with an adequate job in the front office, putting enough guys around these three, you should be the favorite in the East within the next two seasons, if not this year. So I would make that trade right away.
No hesitation. No hesitation whatsoever on PhD's part. And I feel you. I agree. You raised a great point. I think it's very much a win-win situation for Cleveland. I don't think there's a wrong way for them to go. I think you raised a really important point, though, in how you decipher which of the wins is a better win. That's a lot of wins I just said, but You know, all wins are not created equal. And some wins are better than others, you know. And where's my one Rosie Perez clip? That's what I need right now. I need that Rosie Perez. I need Rosie to hit me off. She can explain as much better than I could. Let me go ahead and get Rosie in the house real quick. You know, she can do this. Here you go.
Well, you know, Billy, I got a different set of rules of my own. You want to hear them? Here they go. Sometimes when you win, you really lose. And sometimes when you lose, you really win. And sometimes when you win or lose, you actually tie. And sometimes when you tie, you actually win or lose.
Man, that was like Socrates. Like me. That's basically what's ringing in Dan Gilbert and the Cleveland Brasses, the front office of Cleveland. That's what's ringing in their head right now. How much do we really want to win this? Love, 26-13, dominant rebounder, great shooter for a big man, probably one of the best shooters we've seen from as a big, you know, behind Dirk, Larry Bird, guys like that. Range out to the three. Can play pick and roll, pick and pop. Good passer. Just a 25-year-old all-star. You know, 25-year-old all-star just entering his prime. You know, that's what you're looking at. On the other flip side of the coin, you got two 19, 20-year-old guys who were, you know, the top picks in their respective draft classes. Anthony Bennett, kind of a 6'8 stretch forward, stretch four, can shoot it, put it on the deck, attack the basket, still has a ways to go in his development. And then you got Andrew Wiggins, ultra-athletic wing, can play the 2-3, can guard all three positions on the perimeter. Right now, still a work in progress on offense. And, you know, then you got LeBron, who is 29. In his prime, going into his 11th year in the league, which despite being 29, that's a lot of mileage on a 29-year-old's legs. It's not the average 29-year-old. You know, when we think about great players at 29, LeBron is more like, you know, those great players when they were 32, 33, you know, because guys were coming into the league at a later age at that time. The clock is ticking, and it's a real clock. And this is the thing I want to ask. How does Kevin Love paired up with LeBron James and Kyrie Irving match up with the rest of what's going on in the East? Now, before we have that conversation, we first got to figure out, well, who's in the mix, right? So I want each of you guys to kind of – who are your top four teams in the East as of right now, PhD?
Wow. Man, so last week before Stevenson signed, I had the Pacers as the top team, but no more. I do not. So as far as the top four teams in the East, in no particular order, I have the Chicago Bulls, the Miami Heat, Cleveland Cavaliers, and the Wizards. And I went back and forth between the Wizards and Charlotte. I was going to call them the Bobcats, but they're the Hornets now.
That's right.
I really went back and forth between those two. So if you force me to order it, and again, the Pacers just, to me, losing Stevenson was their dog factor. I just don't know where they're going to be at right now. So actually having them, I have them at the 5 or 6 slot. So I would go, and this is tough, but I would go Cleveland 1, Miami 2, Bulls 3, and I will go with the Wizards at 4 as far as seeds.
Okay. So you got Cleveland fans, Kevin Love. No Love. You got 1 as of right today.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I don't argue with that at all. I kind of agree. D. Wills, what's your top four look like in the East?
I've been going back. Let me start with the top three. I would say the Bulls 1 because Thibodeau
has done a remarkable job without any kind of offensive impact. But you have McDermott, if you watch him in the summer league, the way this kid ready to go right now. So you add him, you add some of the young guys they've had who can be offensive players, along with Derrick Rose coming back. You know, if Cleveland stays the way it is, I would go Chicago at one. Then I would go with Cleveland at two. But I just think if it's currently constructed, it's going to take them some time to kind of gel. So I'm about two or three. I have Miami at four, and I differ on the Indiana thing because sometimes you have addition by subtraction, I'm a Stevenson fan. I think he's the one that brought Dog. I'm not out of all these teams. The one team that is, even with Stevenson out, the one team that has some pieces that are somewhat stabilized is Indiana. And I would put them at three just because I think they got a lot to prove because of the way that they went out. Now, I'm not thinking that they're going to do it, but sometimes getting some stuff out your locker room, even though they're great players, can force people to step up. It might force Paul George to take on a little bit more of a scoring punch and do some things. So I'm not going to put dirt on them right away. And then I would put Washington, I've got myself, Washington at four. Would kind of be and Miami would be five. I think Miami is going to kind of figure his stuff out, and I'm not quick to say they're going to jump right in and do it. You don't know how often D-Wade going to play, even with some of the pieces they have. I just don't. I like Dang, but, you know, he's 17 and what? What do we call him? 17 and what?
17 and 7.
So he's going to give you that, but I don't know if that's enough to move them up night after night. I think it's going to take them a while to gel.
Okay. And you heard D-Wade is on the paleo diet. I don't know if y'all know about that, man. That's that. He's on a new diet. He done switched up his diet. He's trying to drop some weight. He's on the paleo diet. Have you guys heard of this?
No.
I have not. I told you he needs to lose weight. Now, if he loses weight, he doesn't think that changes my numbers a little bit. But he's got to lose that weight.
Well, I mean, even if he loses weight, his knees is going to be his knees. It's only so much wear and tear your knees can take. It's a done deal. They're not going to get better. They may hurt less. They're still going to hurt. But anyway, the paleo diet is basically where you eat like a caveman, like from the paleo era. That's why it's called the paleo. I mean, seriously, it sounds like I'm making this up. I'm not. I'm not at all. So basically, there's only certain things you can eat, and it all has to be like natural proteins. You can't eat any processed food. But you got to basically eat like a caveman, like cave people, like primitive people would eat. It's crazy. So that's
you have to have got a lot of money.
Yes. Yeah, that is, man. That is. You know, it really is. So I have a lot of my four has a lot of similarities with you guys four. You know, with Wiggins today, with Wiggins and Bennett and Waiters and all these other guys, I have Cleveland at two. I have the Chicago Bulls at one. Now, with both teams, I can see either of these teams flip-flopping. I can see Cleveland being number one. I can see the Bulls being number two. I think this is a fluid situation right now. With the Bulls, it depends on Derrick Rose's knees. But adding Pau Gasol gives them a different dimension as far as somebody you can dump the ball into and get some buckets. McDermott has been excellent. I think he'll give them another shooter. And then the guy, Mirotić, the foreign kids that they got coming over, is supposed to be a guy who can contribute right away. So, you know, this offseason they've added three guys who are going to contribute to a team that won 48 games last year actually four guys, because now you're bringing Derrick Rose back into the fold. Of those four guys, you have two proven high-level performers in Gasol and Rose, and then you have two young guys who can come in and you know, pitch in where they can to a nice core of Taj Gibson, Joe Kim Noah coming off the best season of his career, Jimmy Butler, Mike Dunleavy, Kirk Heinrich, some guys who are good glue guys. So they got a good mix in Chicago. Again, Derrick Rose's knees will determine how high they go, but I think even if Rose isn't MVP-level Rose, they're still a 54, 55-win team. Just because, as you said, D-Will, Thibs is going to get that. You know, Thibs is going to make them be that. And in Cleveland, you know, right now, as they sit, is a team with a lot of versatility. They can play a lot of different ways. They can play three guards. They can play small. They can go big. They can do a lot of things with the pieces that they have right now. That I think, you know, if Blatt is as good of a coach as he's advertised, some things that he could tinker with during the regular season, find some different matchups, a la the San Antonio Spurs, where they played a lot of different ways last season, building up to their playoff run. Cleveland could do something similar with Wiggins and Bennett, given the versatility of some of those guys. When you think you got Tristan Thompson, a real athletic four, Andy Varejao, who can bang on the inside, but is still pretty athletic at this point in his career. You know, you got LeBron, who can play three or four or two. You know, so they got some pieces. Waiters can, you know, play on the ball, play off the ball. So they got some pieces to do some things. Again, depending upon how quickly they gel, I think they have a ton of talent. They can do a lot, and they got LeBron James. I mean, that tips the scale right there. My three, I have the Toronto Raptors. You know, I don't want to forget about them. That's a team that is bringing back a young core that finally kind of broke through last year. They're kind of where the Pacers were two or three years ago, you know, where they kind of got it together and started to win, and they were able to keep some of the key pieces there. Now they just need a couple years to really continue to grow and take those steps towards becoming a legitimate player, a team that's really in the mix. They made some questionable decisions on draft night. They took a dude named Bruno. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. This dude was not on anybody's draft board, so we'll see if they wasted the pick or not. But anyway, they got some good pieces in DeRozan, Lowry, Valanciunas, decent squad. I think they'll continue to do what they do. They may be the new version of the Atlanta Hawks from the mid-2000s, where every year they're a three seed, but really not a major threat. My number four team is the Miami Heat. I'm interested to see if Chris Bosh has got another gear, because now he's the one dog. He's the lead. He's the alpha. You know, he went from third on the food chain to top dog. I just want to see how that's going to play out. I just think that's interesting. Like, have we ever really seen a guy go from being a top dog to then totally changing his game to be a elite-level role player to then having to totally shift gears again and go back to being a superstar franchise guy? That's just an interesting career arc. I don't know if I've ever – I mean, D. Wills, you kind of are a long view guy. I don't know if we've ever had a guy kind of have that kind of career arc where he starts out his career as an elite dude, takes a back seat, and then gets pushed back into the driver's seat again. Can you think of anybody like that?
I can't even think of – I'm trying to think through someone that was close. I can't really think.
Yeah, it's a weird arc, man. It's a weird arc. But anyway, I'm interested to see what the Heat can do. So the Heat are my four. But the reason I think I wanted to kind of establish where we saw Cleveland standing is, as of right now, you know, LeBron leaving Miami basically blew the East open.
Yeah.
I mean, it blew it wide open. And so, you know, if they stand pat, I don't think they, you know, as you said, it, you know, as Rosie laid out, you know, how much you want to win? You know, which win is the bigger win? So that's the conundrum that I think management is in when you really can't lose, you know, and you're just determining between how big is the win going to be, especially in a situation where, you know, you have the guy. You got the master chess piece. You know, you got the king on the chessboard where you want him. And now it's just, what are you going to do? Are you going to, you know, put your foot on everybody's throat, or are you going to make it a slow death? Are you going to slow walk the crowd? You know, and I think that's the choice between Love and Wiggins right now, is that, you know, we could slow walk the crowd, because I still think they probably got, you know, the Bulls are going to be formidable. I think the Pacers still have, you know, that experience, you know, and they still have that moxie where, you know, they're a threat. But, you know, the East, which was probably four teams deep last year, is now going to be six teams deep at least, because right outside that top four, you got Indiana, you got Washington, and 70, you got the Charlotte Hornets now, you know, plus the eighth seed last year, Atlanta Hawks, get Al Horford back. So the East is going to be very different. You know, this is, you know, some teams that made the play. Brooklyn will probably be on the outs this year. I don't think they'll be back in the playoffs. But the Atlanta Hawks, they were able to scrounge up an eighth seed without Al Horford. Getting him back will be a big get. I mean, he's one of the best power forwards in the game. So Atlanta will be improved again. So it'll be interesting to see, but Cleveland is one of the top two teams. I think we all agree on that. I don't think any of us sees them outside of that top two. And I think right now with LeBron, they probably have an inside track. I think the Pacers, you know, are the team with the most experience outside of them, but I think they've taken a considerable step back without Stevenson. I do think it's addition by subtraction. I do think they'll still be a good team. I think they'll be a good team that have better chemistry, which I think will help them. But I think in the end, when it gets down to the nitty-gritty of on-court production, they're going to be lacking a little bit. They just don't have enough guys to get it done. And they didn't really have anybody waiting in the wings to step up into, you know, they picked up Rodney Stuckey from Detroit, and I don't know. That doesn't really move the needle for me. If they make the Love trade, right? So right now they're a top two team, consensus of the real sports guys. The Love trade, does it put them, how does adding, taking out Wiggins and Bennett and adding Kevin Love match them up with Chicago? You know, because right now, the thing that concerns me with this, the way the Cleveland roster is configured right now, and I don't know if getting Kevin Love addresses this or not, but they don't have any guys with, other than Varejao, LeBron, and Wiggins has potential to be a great defensive player. I don't know if he has the mentality, but that's it as far as defense goes. They're bringing in Ray Allen. They're trying to bring in Ray Allen. They brought in Mike Miller, and they couldn't double team a pile of dust in the corner. At this point in their careers, I mean, that pile of dust is gonna go by them. You know, that pile of dust is gonna beat that double team. So that's the one thing that I have concern with, is their defensive chops. And when you watch what the Spurs did to a very cohesive Miami defense, they made it look in total disarray. When you talk about winning the ring, that's where my concern lies. Is, okay, so, yes, whether you keep Wiggins or Bennett, whether you add Kevin Love, do you got the defensive chops to be able to fly around and disrupt what San Antonio does? When I ask that question, what are your thoughts on that particular question, D. Wills? Do you think defensively, as they're configured, even if they take out Wiggins and Bennett and add in Kevin Love, defensively, do you think they're equipped to be able to deal with the San Antonio Spurs or the Oklahoma City Thunder or the Los Angeles Clippers or the Rockets or whoever comes out of the West?
I think Love makes them, you know, rising up in the rank overall in the NBA. You know, I think without Love, when you start doing rankings overall, you know, the East team, whatever the East is, depending on how Chicago, you know, they might, you might be pushing, going down to about the fifth, sixth slot before you come to an East team. I think with someone like Love, they might push up into that third, second, fourth spot in the league. And because I think what Love does is I think you're going to see Kyrie's scoring go up by 1 or 2 points just on easy baskets coming off his defensive rebounding and outlets and getting out in the floor and creating those quick scoring, which I think he can do really well. I think the other thing that he'll do, because he creates spacing, which I think the one thing that's great about him is that he's shooting threes, but his rebounding is incredible. And I think one of the things against San Antonio where they struggled is San Antonio got a lot of second shots. Like they miss, get a rebound, and get another shot. And so I think one of the things that Cleveland will be good at, I think they'll be a good rebounding team. They can, they'll hold you to one shot, which is a good one. I also think good offense makes good defense. They can convert at a high level, where I think offensively Miami was challenged in terms of fluidity and ability to be able to score in multiple ways. I think the way this team might be coached and developed will have multiple ways in which they'll attack the basket, which I think when you watch San Antonio in earlier rounds, they struggle with those teams that was able to have more balanced scoring. When you put more pressure on them defensively, they were able to. Miami just couldn't do that. Miami was very limited, particularly with D-Wade's injury, to be able to put that kind of pressure on them offensively. So I think sometimes good offense helps the defense against a team like the Spurs. Spurs are kind of like, you know, a good boxer that has a jab. As long as you let them control that jab, you ain't got a chance of winning. But if you can disrupt it and you force them to go to something else, then they don't fight as well as you can. And I think Cleveland has not – will they be able to do this first year? You know, I think the goal for them is get to the finals and compete. If they win, that's good. But if they can get to the finals and have that experience, I think that would be their goal this year. But I do think – and I think Kevin Love's defense will get better with playing with LeBron. There could be certain some demands on him defensively that, frankly, I don't think anybody in Minnesota was able to do that LeBron will do. I think Kevin can play better defense. I think LeBron will help him do that.
Do you think his defense will be as good or better than Chris Bosh's defense?
I think it can be as good because one of the things that he does that Bosh has – see, Bosh spaced the floor, but Bosh wasn't able to rebound from that position. Whereas Kevin can space the floor, but he still is a viable rebounder, which makes him, I think, even more impactful. Whereas when Bosh was out in the corner, if he wasn't getting the ball, he was basically a non-factor offensively versus Kevin Love. Can play. He's been playing that way on a team with not a lot of offense. He's still finding a way to get rebounds. So I think he can have that kind of impact on both ends of the floor that is kind of unique. I mean, he's playing kind of like Bosh is playing, but he rebounds at a much higher rate. He rebounds at the rate that Bosh was rebounding in Toronto, playing closer to the basket. He's doing that playing away and close to the basket. So, I mean, that's a uniqueness that's hard to find.
Yeah. And so this is where this is. I'm looking at the numbers from the NBA Finals, and I got some numbers to throw out real quick. All right, 52.8% from the floor. That's what San Antonio shot. All right, 46.6% from three. 46. Most teams would be happy shooting 46% from the floor. Period. All right.
Yeah.
25.4 assists per game. My thing is, I understand Love is a great player. Wiggins and Bennett are great, young pieces. Cleveland needs to really look a little bit bigger at this. Love is the hot name that's out right now. But does he impact what they're facing? You know what I'm saying? Is he going to allow in 2 years LeBron to not have to guard KD? I don't know. I don't know if Wiggins will be able to do that. I don't know. But that's the other piece. Like, is win now But you also got to look at, okay, if we're going to win now, who do we have to beat, and who's going to help us beat them? And my question is, as they're configured now, and if they bring in Love, I don't know if they're equipped either way. I don't know if they're equipped to beat the San Antonio Spurs. I don't know if they're equipped to beat the Oklahoma City Thunder or whoever comes out of the West, even with Kevin Love. Because the one area where Kevin Love doesn't help them is where Miami needed help. Miami needed a rim protector. When you got somebody shooting 52% from the field, you need somebody at the rim. You might want to have somebody at the rim a little bit to deter some of those easy baskets. You know, when you got a team shooting 46% from the three, you know, yeah, Love can score points, but he ain't helping that. He ain't dealing with that. You know, Wiggins and Bennett, I don't know if they're ready to deal with that either.
Yeah, but the other thing that Miami wasn't doing, they got nothing from the point position. Whereas the point guards, if you look at that series, the point guards basically played, like, with nothing. You're not doing that. They're not doing that with Kyrie. I mean, the point guards,
the other piece,
whatever they want. If you watch the stretches that they pulled away, it was their point guards who created the opportunities. And that's the biggest upgrade you have right there. Plus, you discounting Waiters. I don't think Waiters are part of it. You discounted Tristan. I mean, they have other pieces. They're more athletic in places that Miami wasn't athletic in.
Yes, they're more athletic, but athletic don't make you a good defender.
Yeah, but
Waiters ain't known for guarding nobody.
What was Miami doing on offense? But what was Miami doing on offense? The other part is, I don't know what Miami was doing on offense.
They wasn't scoring.
They wasn't doing anything. So part of the pressure was, not only were you not defending, but you weren't making them work on defense to do it. You weren't forcing them to take guys off the floor. And so not only are you not doing anything on the offensive end, now you're not stopping on defense. So if you look at San Antonio earlier series, people were putting pressure on them defensively. That disrupted what they could do offensively. I think people look to – that's part of the equation. And Miami did none of that. Which I think Cleveland, as it's constructed, with Love, they put too much pressure on San Antonio defensively.
Yeah, and I would argue that Oklahoma City, with probably two of the toughest dudes to guard in the league, lost 4-2. You know, they had the one game where Ibaka came back and gave them a boost, but pretty much it was San Antonio. Dallas, I mean, and they took it to the Blazers, who got –
Yeah.
They took it to the Blazers, who young and athletic, 4-1, took them out real quick, you know, thanks for showing up. Here's your one game, deuces. The Mavericks, though, gave them a challenge. And I think
Cleveland's closer to the Mavericks.
I don't know if they are, though, because the Mavericks had some different kind of pieces. They had somebody who could protect the rim. They had an elite perimeter defender. And then they had a point guard who could shoot. But then they also had another perimeter creator. So they had two. They had Calderon, Monte Ellis, who that's a tough match. I think that's a tough matchup for San Antonio because Ellis is too quick for Leonard or Green. He's just way too quick. And you know, they're not necessarily – San Antonio's not necessarily going to isolate either one of those guys. So, the question, looking big picture, and what I'm questioning is love is the move to make right now, but is he the right move? You know, is this going to be one of those moves we look back on this time next year and we're like, I don't know if Love is going to get it done. You see what I'm saying? That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
I think it's the move to make now, but kind of stepping back and taking a long view, are we going to be back here next year saying, dang, I don't know if Love got the chops for what they need him. I don't know if he's what they need. I don't know if he's going to give them what they need defensively. Offensively, I think he helped. Offensively, I think they're a team that is tough to deal with. But so is Oklahoma City. So are the Clippers. I mean, they're teams with offensive firepower in the league. There's no doubt about that. But the teams that, and we all know this, the teams that get done are the teams that can get stopped in the fourth quarter. And, one, Love has never had to do that. I don't really know if that's how it is. And the other thing is he doesn't have the athletic ability that Bosh has. Bosh is a way better athlete than Love is. And Bosh was able – we had those same questions about Bosh defensively, but Bosh also had more tools to work with from a physical – from physically. Love is a very smart player, but he's not the most physically gifted guy. You know, he's not long. He's not laterally quick. He's not straight line quick. He's not a leaper. There are some real limitations with his movement defensively that make it exposed. So that's all I'm saying is it's the right move now. Will it be the right move next June? That's the real question. PhD, what are your thoughts?
What's the question again?
Well, I mean, just what are your thoughts on is Love, can we start to think big picture long term, and when you go beyond the East, is Love the guy that would put a Cleveland over the top against San Antonio, against an OKC, against the Clippers, against the Rockets team? How does his presence impact their ability to compete with those teams outside of the East? Because I think right now we all agree that they're a top two team in the East with or without them.
I think Kevin Love is the best available right now. If given a full free agent class, I'm not sure if Kevin Love will be the number one guy in the entire NBA that's going to be eligible the next year or two that you'd want to pair with LeBron. However, I think he'd be a good fit because he's able to space the floor. You know, a lot of people will be critical of his defensive ability. I think he's adequate on pick and roll defense, which at this point, I mean, that's what all big guys have to do in the NBA now. I'm not too concerned about how well they defend on the post. And I think defensively, so I consider defensive rebounding defense. I think that ends the question. And considering this guy gets you 12 to 15 rebounds average, okay, I think that in itself makes him an elite defender. So a big concern I have with Kevin Love is injuries. This past year, he played 77 games, which is solid. He played 77 games, which is great. But if you look at the 2 years previous to that, 2012-2013 year, I think you had him in fantasy basketball, Marcus. He only played 18 games.
Yes, and my team
years
last.
Yeah. And then 3 years ago, he only played 55 games. So if you look at two of the past 3 years, not including this most recent year, he played 18 games in 55 games. To me, that's a big durability issue. I believe that when Dwayne Wade was unable to play, you know, a third of this past season, that's one thing. But when your big guy's not able to play, and your leading rebounder, perhaps leading rebounder in the league, is not able to play, you know, significant portions of the season, that's going to be more difficult to overcome.
Yeah.
So durability is a concern. Durability has been a concern with Kyrie Irving.
Yeah.
Yes, he is. That's been a concern. So given the parameters that the Cavs have with potentially getting Kevin Love, I think there's still concern there as well. But I think Kevin Love brings enough to the table. Everything you all just mentioned, I think the best thing is his rebounding and ability to space the floor. He's not a great three-point shooter, but he's a respectable one that guys can't hang off of him. You know, I'm looking at his statistics now. He shot 38% from three. And then his previous full year, which is 2012, he shot 37%. So he's a solid three-point shooter.
Okay. All right. Yeah, no, great points. You know what I mean? I dig where you're going and what you're saying.
I think,
you know, with the durability, because with both he and Kyrie, I think you raised a point that we hadn't really touched on, with the durability factor. And just the overall unproven, there's a lot of unproven. I mean, can Kyrie get it done when it counts? You know what I mean? We all know he's a beast. But everybody's a beast when all you got to do is go get their numbers. You know, a lot of guys can – Ricky Davis was a monster when he could just go get numbers. You know, Andre Blatch when he was with the Wizards was a monster when he could just go get numbers. But when those numbers have to impact winning, some guys aren't built for that, you know? So, go ahead.
I'm not as much concerned about the step down athletically from Bosch to Kevin Love, because what's different with Kevin Love is he's going to be starting off a lot of those fast breaks with getting the rebounds. So I'm not concerned about him running the floor and doing those sorts of things. So having Bosch, that was a benefit of him, but overall, I think given other big guys in the league, I think Kevin Love does just about everything that Bosch does well, also well, with the exception of Bosch was able to switch off a lot of times in pick and roll, and he'd be okay, you know, guarding other wing players. So I think that's going to be the big separating point.
Yeah, I think ultimately defensively what this team looks like against elite teams is what's going to determine whether or not it's a good move. I think offensively they're going to be fine. I think offensively they're going to give people fits and nightmares. We talk about Kyrie Irving, LeBron James, Kevin Love, you know, whoever else they keep. But with just those three alone, if I'm coaching against them and I'm the guy responsible for coming up with the defensive game plan, I'm not going to sleep tonight before. You know what I mean? I'm not sleeping on the plane ride from the last city. I'm not sleeping. But against the elite teams, defensively, that'll be the adventure this coming year. Whereas when the Heatles, the Super Friends, whatever nickname we want to give that era of the Miami Heat, LeBron, D-Wade, and Bosch, when they came together, it was more how would they mesh offensively, given both Wade and Bron had always had the ball in their hands since they were 7 years old, you know, and how would they figure out how to play together when it involved one of them kind of not having the ball. And they eventually figured it out, but that first season there were some definite bumps in the road along the way. So I think that's where you'll see, if they do make this deal, that's where you'll see the most work needing to be done with this Cleveland team if they pick up Love, is figuring out defensively what they're going to look like. Because the other thing is Kyrie is not a great defender either. So that's the other thing where, you know, you're adding now, you got on the court basically only two guys who really defend in Varejao and LeBron at different times, and everybody else is a question mark defensively. So that'll be the kind of thing with this particular team. I want to transition, though. You listen to Real Sports Guys, RealSportsGuys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio. Fellas, I want us to get into the Dog of the Week real quick while we have a moment. Now, we're going to get into our Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So, what did the Real Sports Guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today. All right. You know how it goes. D. Wills.
We need more dogs.
In a time in boxing where folks they're scared to take on all challengers, I got to give my dog, and I hadn't get a chance to give it to him, is Canelo Alvarez. Lara called him out, went to his press conference, stepped to him at the mic, you know, kind of like when Karis Wan did it to PM Don, just took over stage. And then he was like, I'm not having it. I might be redhead, but I'm not going to go for all this kind of stuff, and I'm about to do some business with him, and got Lara in there and did his work on him, and at a time when folks, you know, are worried about, you know, positioning the right person, Canelo just brought his game.
Okay, okay. Shout out to Canelo. Hey, speaking of which, I'll go into it more when I do mine. I'm just going to save it for when I do mine. PhD.
We need more dogs.
Derek Jeter, respect.
Enough said. I like that one. I like that one. I like that one. All right, I guess I'll do mine. You got any more? Are you good?
I'm good.
All right.
We need more dogs.
Mine is going out to Aubrey Drake Graham. You know, PhD shot me a text. I didn't watch the ESPYs. You know, I just usually don't watch it. Because, I mean, it's the ESPYs. I mean, I know it's – I saw all the stuff y'all talking about. I saw it all. It already happened. Nonetheless, Drake hosted it. The rapper Drake, he hosted the ESPYs. And he did a great job. And the reason I kind of chuckled when you brought up Canelo is he and Blake Griffin did the skit, man. And it is hilarious. If you haven't YouTube it, look it up. Drake did a really good job. He got off to a rocky start, but he picked up steam and he kept it rolling. He had another skit he did on Manny Pacquiao. I can't wait to get in the lab and cut some of these some sound bites up because it's some great stuff. Some great material that we're going to have to add to the board. He also did a couple of great songs, brought Brian McKnight out to sing a song called Side Pieces. it was just hilarious and awkward and uncomfortable given the audience. All right, you singing a song called Side Pieces in front of, you know, a couple thousand athletes. It was a great moment, man. It was hilarious, you know. So if you get a chance to just Google Drake and the ESPYs, you get a good laugh. You get a good 10 minutes of entertainment out of his skits and some of his monologues during the show. So hats off to Drake. I thought he did a great job. I was entertained. I DVR'd it after I heard that he had done a good job. So then I DVR'd it one night. It came on like 2 in the morning. I wasn't watching it. So I DVR'd it. I just fast-forwarded through the awards. I mean, I really didn't care about that. I just kind of saw what he did, and I was entertained. That's my Dog of the Week. So this week's edition of Dog of the Week, we got Canelo Alvarez. We got Derek Jeter, respect. All right? And then we got Drake. So we're going to keep the show rolling. You listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio. We're going to finish out the show talking some NFL fantasy football. Real quick, fellas, fantasy football prejudices. This is an idea that I had as I was thinking about, you know, I started doing draft prep for fantasy football. You know, that's one of my just life maxims is that you always be prepared. You know, I don't know if y'all remember the rapper Sugar Free. Y'all remember Sugar Free?
Yeah. No, I don't.
No. Okay. So he was like, he was out of Oakland. He was like a pimp rapper, you know, back in the mid '90s. You know, a lot of pimpish cats, DJ Quick, you know, cats like that, kind of coming out on the West Coast, pimp rappers. Anyway, he had a song, "If You Stay Ready, You Ain't Got to Get Ready." So that always kind of stuck with me. I heard that as a 15, 16 year old, and I was like, that makes sense. So that's kind of one of my life maxims. And so I'm getting ready for the draft. I'm doing my draft prep right now. And there's just certain things, certain players, certain teams, coaches, guys that I'm like, I can't get down with you, can't roll with you, can't ride with you, can't do it. You know what I mean? I just can't roll with certain people. You know, and we all have them. We've kind of discussed them in passing, you know, but never really kind of gone into them, you know, never really kind of broken them down. So, you know, I wanted five, but if you don't have five, I understand because you just may not really have five prejudices. But give me some of your prejudices that you have when it comes to fantasy football. I'll give an example. DeSean Jackson. couple of years ago, I had him on. I actually had Donovan McNabb on one of my fantasy football teams, and he was quarterback of the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, I matched up. It came down to a Monday night game. I needed Donovan to get a certain amount of points. I don't remember what the point total was, but it was close enough where it was definitely doable, and he was on pace to get it. He throws a 60-yard bomb to DeSean Jackson. Jackson catches it, runs past the defender, and just before he gets into the end zone on some showboat stuff, he just flips the ball to the ref. And so it's not a touchdown. And he lost me a game. And I was so upset because it was a game that I did not want to lose to that particular person. That was the other piece about it. It was who I lost to. And so from that moment on, I made a pact never to draft DeSean Jackson. And I stuck with that. I will never, ever draft him. From that moment, he turned me off to everything he's about at that particular moment. I was like, you moron. And since then, I've seen actually quite a few people do that. College kids, pros, where they will toss the ball to the refs zealously before they actually cross the goal line. And I'm like, every time it happens, it reminds me of how much I dislike DeSean Jackson because I feel like he started this. He didn't, but I feel that way. So that's one of my prejudices. So I would never draft DeSean Jackson. I don't care under what, no circumstances will he be on one of my teams. So that's an example. PhD, do you have any kind of fantasy football prejudices to share with us? It's time to share.
Well, I've talked about D'Angelo Williams quite a bit.
Yes, you have. Yes, you have. It's well documented.
His talent has never quite caught up with his potential. Another rule of thumb I have is I don't like guys who hold out. You know, they hold out in this part of camp. I've been burned with that so many times. Most recently, who's the guy in Houston? Foster. And, you
Aaron
know, now
Foster,
now they're saying Jamal Charles is a guy.
Yeah, a couple years ago, CJ2K.
Yep, I can't mess around with guys who hold out, man. Eli Manning is a guy that I can't mess with. Eli can get you 500 yards or 5 interceptions any week. It's a possibility. And that might be a week that his team wins. You know, Eli is a guy that he just gets it down the field normally, and his statistics oftentimes don't represent the type of player that he is. What other guys do I have that, who have I had bad luck with? You know, Brandon Lloyd is a guy that I've had bad luck with. The 3 or 4 years before he had that big year in Denver, I think it was, where did he have his big year at before he went to the Patriots? Was it Denver? Was it Chicago? Wherever he was at before then, he was in San Francisco for a few years, and he was a guy that would jump out and get 3 or 4 touchdowns in the first 2 weeks. He'd be that hot free waiver pickup, you know, or you make a move and get him, and then he wouldn't do anything for the rest of the year. And that's a guy that kind of burned me over the years. I can keep going, but I'll stop.
Well, I'll jump
who's
in.
Who's the guy that, or who are some prejudices you have in regards to fantasy football, D?
This is my one. Don't draft any running back that is coached by Shanahan.
And the reason
why I say that is they do by committee. You might have a guy, now, if you're good with stocks, you might pick the right guy, and it might like, ding, ding, ding. You could get 25 points in 1 week. But those cats run running backs into the ground. You never know who's going to start. They have 3 or 4 people. It's like, unless you get – I just say stay away from Shanahan. The other thing is never take – don't draft a receiver for New Orleans who isn't Graham. Yeah, I call him a receiver.
Drew Brees will throw a lot of touchdowns, but he's going to throw it to about 12 different people. The only person he'll consistently hit is Graham.
Yeah.
And so if you can't get Graham, don't drive anybody else. Maybe if, when Darryl Sproles was in his heyday, you know, maybe getting him out of the backfield. The same thing with Tom Brady, unless you're in a PPR league. And this is where I think, Phil, you're right on the ground with, is that you'll catch, you know, Wes Welker type or whatever with Brady. You know, if this is a PPR, then I'll get a Brady receiver. But, again, same rule with that. I extend on D'Angelo Williams. Don't draft any Carolina running back. Going all the way back. The thing about it is Carolina seems to have they trend of defensive football coaches. And they always have running backs that tease you. Think about it. You know, think about how many years you went in. You just talked about D'Angelo. But think about the number of running backs they had and how many times you went in to the season thinking, wow, one of these guys are going to hit. And it's like every once in a while, every year you'll get one. But it seems like Carolina's like fool's gold sometimes. And you might hit. But I just choose to stay away from them altogether. And so I got a few things. I agree with you. If a person holds out, I've been burned too many times. When you said that, I'm like, man, you right on point. You right on point. When you talked about hold out, I mean, I didn't even think about that, but you right on point. If a running back hold out, stay away from like plague. Just be like, let somebody else get him. You know he got a hammy coming. He got something coming. I mean, when you said that, I started laughing. I was like, hey, that's a key one altogether. And then I used to say, you know, particularly the Bears before they had that most recent run, boy, I used to, you know, stay away from any offensive play with the Bears, but that's changed over time. They used to frustrate you to no end again, but now that they've changed and they've had Cutler there, I've changed my ways with Bears. The other thing I do is I stay away. I've gotten away from if you have a favorite team, avoid taking your quarterback. It's one of those things where you can't be objective. I'm a Steeler fan, and I've held on to Roethlisberger more than I needed to. I've started him more than I needed to, and I would say if you have a favorite team, unless your favorite team is quarterback by Brady or Manning or something like that. But if you have a favorite team, to your extent, don't draft your quarterback because you will be looking through some glasses that will fool you every time. So those are some of my things that I've tried to stay away from.
Yeah, I've also tried to stay away from teams that are historically bad. Teams that for the past 2 or 3 years just have been really, really bad football teams. So right now that would be the Cleveland Browns. I'd be concerned about with the Bills. And the Browns got me last year because I picked up Brandon Whedon. Whedon was the guy I picked up, you know, got a waiver on towards the end of this draft in two of my leagues, and clearly he didn't play very well. I also have a positive bias that bites me on has-beens. You know, a few years ago I had Jamal Charles, Chris Johnson, Andre Johnson.
Yeah.
I had those guys on my team, and only one of them really worked out, which was Jamal Charles. But sometimes I get caught up in what guys have done. You know, last year with Calvin Johnson, I picked him up early in all three of my leagues, and you know, I mean, he put up good numbers, but part of me was hoping that he'd have that astronomical year like he had in a 2012 season. And he just didn't have that.
Mm-hmm. You hoping for that D Wade moment. You like this
right.
is gonna be the game. You know, we all like this is gonna be the game. Wade gonna break out. He about to go on a 2-game. No, he just old. You hoping for that moment.
Right.
I had that all the time and I ride it too hard. Like I was like, maybe this week. And you're afraid to drop him. Like you're afraid to drop when you know you should drop him or you should put him on the bench and you're afraid. You get caught in that. What I call that, you get caught in that twilight zone with an old cat because you just know this is the week they're going to put it together. Yeah, I get caught in that all the time. I got to stop. Don't fall in love. You know, you got to get your Belichick thinking on. You know, don't fall in love with these folks. You know, and I think that's one of the things that I've tried to work on. When you think about fantasy, how has the game changed? Like, you have these rules, but how has fantasy changed from when you started playing in terms of your strategies?
Well, I think the biggest way it's changed is that everybody has similar resources. It used to be when I started playing fantasy, I think my first fantasy football season was 2004 maybe, so 10 years ago, there were literally like you would buy that Street and Smith or whoever had that preseason book, magazine. And now there's so many websites, there's so many podcasts you can listen to. Now, of course, is the fantasy cipher with the guru from KZU and
that's right.
Mayor Campbellton. I mean, that's the one you should listen to. But there's just so many resources out there. So it used to be you get that sleeper, and if you were crafty, it's a good chance you get that sleeper. Now, if I wait past Thursday, those sleepers are gone. They have been eaten up. So another big change is just how leagues have evolved. So the impact of independent defensive players. One of the things that Eric does really well in our league is he puts a cap on the number of moves you can make per week. So, you know, maybe you can only make 4 moves per week in terms of picking up guys, and they don't reset until Tuesday morning. To me, that makes it more strategic. So guys just can't load up on people or play defense in fantasy football. Well, let me pick up this guy and drop him so my opponent won't get burned on him. I'll burn me with him. So there's just so many different aspects of fantasy football now that you have to look at things in a different way. It used to be you get a workhouse running back and you're fine, but now a workhouse running back, a workhorse running back, I mean, those are things of the past, man. There's probably less than 5 of those in the league right now where you can consistently depend on them to get your numbers each week. It has become a wide receiver league. Fantasy football has become about wide receivers and quarterbacks. And I would say even more wide receivers because it used to be just if you have the elite quarterbacks, they can give you big numbers. Well, the elite quarterbacks are more consistent, but on any given week, you know, a middle-of-the-road quarterback can give you great numbers. Mm-hmm. So for me, you really have to focus on the receivers and also understanding your point structure. And this is the time of the year to understand your point structure because, you know, good commissioners, they will find ways, like they'll look at the previous year and figure out, okay, what was one of the downsides of the league? Was it too easy to score points? You know, were sacks worth 6 points and touchdowns are worth 6 points? Okay, now let me readjust sacks down to 4 points or 3 points. But a lot of guys don't get into that, and they'll draft based on what happened last year. I think fantasy football is about training now. I try to do at least 5 to 10 mock drafts. And it may not be a full mock draft, but I might do the first 4 or 5 rounds
on Yahoo, just to get in the field to kind of see who will be available. The other side of that is understanding what your league rules are, because you can't draft how you did the previous year if your rules have changed. So those are some things that I think about.
Well, it's interesting because I'm assuming my first role as a commissioner, and I just was thinking through some of the things that you were saying, you know, for a league that we've had for a long time, and we're about to try to breathe some life into it, into our beloved college league. You know, a lot of folks who are associated with the place where you and I got our roots. And so I'm trying to understand my role. You know, when you play, you just kind of show up and do your thing. But when you're trying to set the structure for the league and trying to see how you can get people engaged, you know, it takes on a whole entirely different light. So I'm just things you're thinking about, you know, how do you start to adjust it to try and opportunities for folks to have multiple ways they can build a team, you know, so they don't have to, you know, if you don't get the top, you know, you say, you know, one of those five running backs, you still have a way to build a roster that can compete. And so if you can come up with a scoring that allows for people to have diverse ways in which they can challenge every week, as long as they're creative enough, you know, you're never out of it if you don't get one of those top five running backs. You know what I'm saying? So I like the way you're thinking through that. It's got me thinking about my role as a commissioner. So, yeah, I'm excited about that. And how those don'ts we just talked about have evolved and changed.
Right.
You know, like I said the don't about Brady, but if you get the right person and you in the PPR league, you know, that don't turns into a yes, right? Because he might throw a touchdown, but he might, you know, he'll have a couple of receivers that aren't get like 8-9 receptions, you know, and so, you know, it changes, you know, you start looking at a scoring that my usual don't might turn into something different when I'm looking at it like that. So you're right, the diversity of the league is incredible. If you were one of the things you and I talked about a little bit offline, as we finish this conversation before, you have a couple of things, and you might touch on this, you know, in the podcast as when we get Eric together. But you have a couple of things in terms of creating a culture for a league. You know, leagues go up and down, but there's some things you've been fortunate enough to be a part of, some challenging leagues. You've been fortunate enough to be a part of some good league. You know, what are some of the things that you think are, you know, for those people who are putting together, getting their drafts together, getting their leagues organized, you know, what are some of the key components that you would advise anyone who's serving that commissioner role?
Yeah, well, our commissioner, Eric, the guy who does the fantasy football cipher, he does a really good job. And, I mean, that's my main league. One of the creative things he does is, there's a JV division. So everybody who does not make the playoffs the year before or like the previous year, so everybody who missed the playoffs last year, they get stuck in a division. And everybody who makes the playoffs are in another division. So there's two divisions. And one of the benefits of that is if you win your division, you automatically make the playoffs. So sometimes you end up getting a team that goes 5-8, and they'll make the playoffs because they're in a JV division. But Eric's been doing this for the better part of 10 years. And most of those guys, I would say at least 9 or 10 of the 12 of us have been in the league at least 6 or 7 years. So, you know, you don't want to come in that JV division because it's going to be verbal abuse. It's going to be verbal abuse, and you just don't want to do it. So that's one incentive. Another incentive is, you know, you split up the pot money and you pay out winners for whoever scores the most points in a given week. That's another way to keep managers engaged. So if you have a team that's 2-5, or 2-7, and there's still another 4 weeks left in the season, and they're pretty much eliminated from the playoffs, you know, managers will still be motivated to set their lineup, look at trades, improve their team, you know, work the waiver wire in hopes that they can pull out, you know, the most points in a week. So there's just little things like that that he does. And there's more. I don't want to give all the different tips that he does, because I always tell him, man, you need to write a book. You should write a little, you know, 30, 40-page book, a little pamphlet for fantasy football managers or commissioners, just ways to make your league more engaging. And you know, I was telling you offline that Eric had sent out an email, the email you get every year. Hey, we're redoing the league. You need to sign up on Yahoo. Within 24 hours, 11 of the 12 managers had signed up. And you and I have both been part of leagues where the commissioners are chasing people to an hour before the draft. Like, hey, we need another team, or we're not going to be able to draft. We've got an odd number of teams. And that setup is all bad. You're laying the foundation for a really horrible fantasy football situation. So, I say if you can only get 8 people to play in your league, but they're committed 8, I think that's better than getting 12 or 14 just to say that you got a 12 or 14-person league, you know, given that maybe 4 or 5 of those managers won't be very good managers.
And I'm taking your advice as I take on, you know, what has been what I call a version of the ACC fantasy. You just play for a trophy. We got a first place and a last place trophy. It's like the old ACC. And, when only one team could go to the tournament. You know, Maryland was good. Duke was good. Carolina was good. Georgia Tech was good. But only one of them could go to the tournament. It used to frustrate me when I watched it. But I understand it. And so I take this advice, Phil. I love what you're doing. And, RG Media, you know, we might be getting into the publishing business. So keep that book on the back side of it. You know, we might have to find a way to release that as a way of getting that thing out and running. Because I think you're right. You know, I think, you know, just in talking to you over the past couple of days, it's really been, you know, when we've had these discussions, even, you know, just getting that sense of what needs to happen, it's kind of got my juices going for the first time in a long time. Because I've been dragging over some leagues for the past 3 or 4 years, and I've got to make a decision. I'm trying to get down to about 2 leagues that I can feel like I can really be a part of. I might get down to 1, you know, just so that I can start to get that old feeling I used to have back in the day when I was playing. You know, I got to the point where I got league overkill. I'm in 6 leagues. I can't keep up with my lineup. I said, no, I can't do it. I'm about to get back. I'm about to get back and get back into 1 or 2 that I can really go deep in. And, you know, if I don't succeed like I need to, that's cool. I'll come back next year and really get into it rather than trying to be in 6 leagues and being frustrated by 5. So I'm with you on that. Game changer is in the building. We really pushed this whole fantasy thing, man. We pushed it deep. I know we want to talk a little bit quickly about some NFL highlights before I get into the last word. Game changer, let me just hit you real quick. I mean, you looked at the free agency stuff.
Yeah.
Give me a sense of who you think are the winners and losers and who are those folks that you think will really benefit from what we've seen in the offseason.
Well, I think for me, it's a combination of what you did in free agency and what you did in the draft. When you start talking about winners and losers in the NFL, the place I go, the team that to me kind of really put themselves in a position, you know, the obvious one is a team like Denver. You know, they made some really good moves, bringing in DeMarcus Ware, T.J. Ward, Emmanuel Sanders, filling some holes, letting some guys go. No Sean Moreno, Eric Decker on that offense, but they had some guys. They got guys to step right in. A team that did some sneaky good work, in my opinion, a team that was already in the mix, the San Francisco 49ers. You know, they brought in Stevie Johnson, who's a strong wide receiver, to add to Crabtree, Anquan Boldin, and what they already have at those particular positions. They drafted Carlos Hyde. They still have Marcus Latimer kind of on deck. Frank Gore kind of getting to that point where he's kind of winding down a little bit. They kept their offensive line strong. So I like a lot what San Francisco did. I thought they did well in the draft. They got guys who are going to come in and help them out early. But then also bringing in some guys with some big playability, also getting a guy like Bruce Ellington out of Clemson. So I really liked what they did as far as putting themselves in position to be able to compete with the team that they're going against, the team that they're facing. They needed more receiving weapons. You know, Crabtree being your only guy, you know, and being able to throw a guy like Richard Sherman on him, bringing in a Stevie Johnson who you can put in the slot, got great speed, good route runner, gives Kaepernick another weapon. They also brought in Blaine Gabbert behind Kaepernick. Now, I don't know how that's going to work out, but, you know, it's somebody who, if Kaepernick does go down, which he has a tendency to get nicked up just because of the style he plays, you know, he hasn't missed a lot of games, but when you're taking hits, it's only a matter of time. You know, everybody's one play away. So,
all right,
those are the guys.
Okay.
What's up?
Thank you. We're gonna get into some more NFL stuff. But leading into next week, we're gonna have Boyd College football coach Seth Durham on board. You know, we like to give love to Division III. We all have allegiance and connection to Boyd College, and we like to find a way to kind of do that with Division III, Division II. So we look forward to that interview. And then we got Hank tomorrow, 8:30 Central, inside the park with Hank. It's off the hook. Got to check it out. Until next week, loving it. Peace.